नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्णा। सो वी वेलकम ऑल द डिवोटीज फॉर द लास्ट सेशन on this series on advent of Lord Krishna. So we have discussed last week how Krishna has now taken residence within the womb of his mother Devaki. Kamsa observes Devaki to be extremely effulgent. Kamsa is also attracted to Devaki's beauty. And he is contemplating within his mind as to what is the possible course of action he should take. Various options are available to him, but he decides against killing Devaki or killing the child in the womb before he is born and awaits the appearance of Krishna patiently. So at this stage, Kamsa, who is obsessed with Krishna's birth, is constantly thinking of Krishna within his mind. So it is described by Shukadeva Goswami, Asena sambishantishtham bhunjana paryatan mahim chintayano rishikesham apashyat Tanmayam Jagat. Kamsa is constantly thinking of Krishna at all times, while sitting, eating, drinking, sleeping, performing all his various activities. Kamsa is constantly immersed in thoughts of Krishna, because there is fear of Krishna. So in this way, Krishna, he invokes various types of feelings amongst various categories of people. And because Kamsa is unfavorable towards Krishna, he is against Krishna, he is Krishna's enemy, so he is thinking of Krishna in terms of an enemy. How Krishna is going to come and kill me? And therefore, Kamsa is unfavorably Krishna conscious. Therefore, this feeling of Kamsa is not called bhakti, because bhakti means favorably Krishna conscious. A devotee engages in serving Krishna with love, with feeling, to please the Lord, not to kill the Lord. And therefore, the response and the reaction on Kamsa is also similar, that Kamsa is filled with anxiety. He is unable to sleep. He is unable to sit peacefully. He loses all peace. Therefore, question can be asked, how by thinking about Krishna one can lose one's peace? Therefore, if you have to become peaceful, you have to think of Krishna favorably. When one engages in thinking about Krishna unfavorably, negatively, with a desire to kill Krishna, then one cannot be peaceful. So Kamsa had a desire to kill Krishna physically. A parallel can be drawn with modern day scientists who desire to kill Krishna. They are constantly thinking about Krishna with a view to kill. Therefore, just like an assassin who is given a task of killing, he makes complete plans of how he is going to kill. Just like famous assassins have been interviewed, and they have always confessed that before carrying out the plot of assassination, they have studied the political leader whom they are supposed to assassinate in great detail, his schedule, what times he comes out of his office, what are his daily habits, who are his closest associates, what is the typical route he takes from home to his office and back. So an assassin makes a complete detailed study. He becomes obsessed thinking about the person he is going to kill. Similarly, Kamsa was like an assassin awaiting Krishna's appearance. There was no peace. So many scientists, their only business in life is to how to create literature to prove that God doesn't exist. So 24 hours they are only meditating on this principle. How to kill God. So all the modern day scientists who are obsessed with the thought of killing God are all Kamsa-like in consciousness. There is no difference in the consciousness. How to kill God. So Kamsa wanted to kill Krishna with his sword, and modern day scientists who deny the existence of God, they want to kill God with the sword of their knowledge, of their so-called research. And as they say, pen is mightier than the sword. And therefore, simply by getting big degrees, one doesn't become a highly elevated, educated person. The real test of education is when one understands that the essence of everything is God. Therefore, here, Kamsa has lost all of his composure because he is obsessed with killing Krishna. And therefore, there is no peace. So that is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. Just like even during the Mahabharata, in the Mahabharata there's description that before the battle of Kurukshetra began, so Krishna, he had an interesting proposal. And Krishna made a proposal that I have this very mystic darpan or a mystic mirror by which it is possible to understand who is constantly thinking of me. Right? Like if you keep that mirror in front of you, the face of the person who is thinking of you most comes in that mirror. That was the special feature of this mirror. So if I want to know who is thinking of me the most at this moment, if I keep the mirror, then within that mirror the face of that person will come. If you keep the mirror in front of you, whoever is thinking of you, that face will come in the mirror. So Krishna held the mirror in front of his face. And whose face came in the mirror? Shakuni. Shakuni's face came. And all Pandavas are surprised. There are so many big devotees of yours, my dear Lord. But who is this person who is most of all thinking of you? Maximum. Shakuni. Shakuni was absorbed in Krishna consciousness. But what was his mood? Because he was the minister, he was the advisor for the Kauravas, he knew that the advisor for the Pandavas is Krishna. So what Krishna must be thinking now, what he must be advising now, what he must be scheming and planning now. So Shakuni was constantly absorbed in thinking about Krishna. But he is not celebrated as one of the great Mahajan, one of the great devotees. We never give example that always think of Krishna like Shakuni. No. He is always condemned, right? Even in your B.R. Chopra's Mahabharata serial, whenever Shakuni character comes, music changes. Some different music comes. And everyone knows this is not a very auspicious music. There is something inauspicious about this fellow. So if he is always thinking of Krishna, why is considered inauspicious? Because his motives not to glorify Krishna, but to kill Krishna. So therefore, Prabhupada would often say that, give God the Nobel Prize. Because God has created everything. And then there are so many scientists who are duplicating what is already there in creation, and they are being given Nobel Prize for that. So Prabhupada said, this is just like, if a dog barks, nobody takes notice. But if a man imitates barking of a dog, and he puts a notice that man barks like Alsatian dog, 10 rupees ticket, there will be a long line. People will say, have you heard? Kalakar hai. Bahut bada. He just barks exactly like dog. So for imitating what God has already given, people are taking credit. And all these big scientists are condemning God, saying, no, God does not exist. So they are constantly thinking about God, but with a view to deny His existence. Our Max Müller, who was one of the great Indologists, he studied Sanskrit for 35 years. And he had only one mission in life. And his mission was, somehow let me translate all the Rig Vedas and prove to the whole world that these Vedas are bogus. That was his mission. So first 30 years he couldn't even do anything because he was studying Sanskrit. But he studied Sanskrit for 30 years and then he started translating in the 31st year. Can you imagine? And after practicing bhakti for 5-6 years, we are feeling we have spent a lot of time. I am not getting taste. Just imagine what taste he must be having, what motivation he must be having, that he didn't give up his learning Sanskrit for 30 years. And we feel after chanting Hare Krishna a little bit, I am still not seeing Krishna. Still I am not entering into that higher bhavas. Still I am sleeping during japa. Why it is happening like this? With so much association, it was not that Max Müller was in association of so many other people who were also in the same mood. He was doing everything alone. But can you imagine what an obsession it must be? What a highly obsessed demon he was. So determined to kill that he planned meticulously for 30 years. And then he translated whole Rig Veda, blasphemed Vedic culture left, right and center, and said whole Indian population is just, these Hindus are just bunch of crazy people. So many nonsense things he wrote. Could never understand what is this. He hated Jagannath Rath Yatra like hell. Couldn't figure out what exactly happens one day of the year, that suddenly the whole city is empty, then one day 10, 15, 20 lakh people come, pull the piece of wood, and next day, every day, everyone again disappear. And he wrote so many articles trying to blaspheme Jagannath Rath Yatra. Nobody took him seriously. On top of that, Jagannath Rath Yatra started in London, rather than trying to stop here in India. But these are examples of people who were constantly thinking how to undermine the importance of Vedic culture. How to destroy people's faith in Sanatan Dharma. Just like Kamsa is planning, scheming, plotting. There is a whole lot of people even in modern times who are constantly obsessed with the thought of destroying your faith in Krishna. They want to kill that Krishna consciousness which is not yet born within your heart, which is waiting to be born. They want to kill that through their words, through their so-called research work, through their media propaganda. Therefore, you have to be careful to protect Krishna, that faith in Krishna which you are carrying within your heart. So do not think that Kamsa is dead. Kamsa is still present in the form of his expansions and manifestations, in the form of so many modern day scholars, modern day scientists who want to kill your faith in Krishna. And on the other hand, if a person is favorably Krishna conscious, whatever he sees reminds him of Krishna, and that is bhakti, and he becomes totally blissful, joyful, and he jumps in ecstasy remembering how Krishna is so merciful, how Krishna is so wonderful, how I have an opportunity to reciprocate with Krishna. And in this way a devotee feels great joy. So a non-devotee and a devotee have exactly the opposite reactions. So just like there was a devotee of Lord Jagannath, and he was constantly absorbed in thoughts of Lord Jagannath. Anything he would see in this world would often remind him of Lord Jagannath. So one day he had sat just for taking some prasad. So his wife was serving him prasad. He had just come back from the temple after taking darshan of Lord, and he was still contemplating on the beautiful form of Jagannath, on his beautiful lotus-like face, on his beautiful eyes. And then his wife served him prasad on a clay plate. So the clay plate was red in color. So it was a reddish clay plate. It was a clay plate which was reddish in color. On top of that she served white rice. And then on top of that she served a blackish kind of spinach, sabji, vegetable. And as soon as he sat and looked at the prasad plate, he was immediately reminded of the eyes of Lord Jagannath. Because eyes of Lord Jagannath, is outside is red, middle is white, and right in the center is black. Jai Shri Radha Gopinath Ji ki, Nitai Gaur Chandra ki, Giridhari Gopal ki. So he is about to start taking prasad, but what he is seeing, he sees Lord Jagannath eye. So immediately he starts jumping in ecstasy, starts shouting up and down. He's jumping up and down shouting, Jagannath, Jagannath, Jagannath. And his wife is bewildered. She is wondering what happened. Something wrong with the prasad? And then she is thinking, maybe my husband has become obsessed with a ghost, possessed by some ghost. So then she goes and calls all the village elders, and they come and see that this fellow is not even touching that prasad, he is just jumping and dancing around the plate, shouting Jagannath, Jagannath, Jagannath. So they come and observe this, and they look at the plate and they say, no, no, there is no ghost problem. He is such a great devotee, just by seeing that prasad plate, he is thinking of Lord Jagannath's eye. So his wife is saying, now how do I feed him? Because he's not interested in eating, he's simply saying Jagannath, Jagannath. I said, don't worry, just change combination a little bit. Right? So you have this red clay plate, you take another leaf plate and put rice in that, and then you serve this vegetable separately in this plate. So she changed the combination a little bit, then they showed, now see the prasad. And then he thought, okay, Now things look normal. Then he sat down to take prasad. This was his consciousness. When he saw prasad, he was reminded of Lord Jagannath's eyes. And here when we are looking at Lord, we are thinking of prasad. Right. So that was such an elevated consciousness. Prasadam plate is there. And is thinking how it looks like Lord's eyes. So this is favorable Krishna consciousness. Constantly immersed in thoughts of Krishna. Tvam na sandarshito dhatra dustaram yachikirshatam kalim sattvaharam pumsam karnadvaram ivarnavam tvam na sandarshito dhatra. So the sages of Naimisharanya are glorifying Suta Goswami. They are saying that you have arrived here to give us this transcendental knowledge, and this spiritual knowledge is going to protect us and save us. Kalim sattva haram pumsam. Because the age of Kali is about to appear. And Kali Yuga is so powerful and so nasty in its influence that Kalim Sattva Haram Pumsam, all good qualities are vanquished in this age of Kali. All of us will be stripped of our good qualities every moment. That is the nature of this age. Therefore, you have appeared just like a great captain who is going to take us across this ocean of Kali. Karanadvaram Ivarnavam. Going to carry us across this ocean on this boat of Srimad Bhagavatam. And you, Srila Sota Goswami, are just like a captain of this ship. So therefore, this Srimad Bhagavatam is that knowledge which can counteract the influence of Kamsa-like scholars, researchers, and so many others who are trying to destroy our faith in Krishna. So we should not succumb to them, but rather take shelter of this most auspicious transcendental knowledge. Now at this stage, when Kamsa is completely helpless, constantly absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and awaiting Krishna's appearance, greatest demigods appear within the prison home and they surround Mother Devaki, and in unseen condition the greatest demigods like Brahma, Shiva, Narada, etc. are all present. And it is described, Brahma bhavascha tatraitya munibhir naradadibhi devai sanucharai sakam girbhir vrishanamaidayan. So vrishanam means rainfall, auspicious mercy. So Krishna is present within the womb of Devaki and is going to shower his causeless mercy upon everyone. Vrishanam. And therefore to receive these rains of Krishna's causeless mercy, Brahma is compared to an agriculturist, chief cultivator of the field. So the dark blue cloud of Krishna has appeared and his auspicious mercy is just about to fall on this planet Earth. And as soon as this mercy of Krishna's rains fall on this earth, you need someone to plow the field. So Brahma has appeared just like a cultivator, an agriculturist who is going to plow that field. Lord Shiva has appeared like a beautiful peacock is going to dance in ecstasy to celebrate Krishna's appearance. Narada has manifested as, and all these other great sages have manifested just like auspicious Chataka birds, to drink that sweet nectarian mercy of Krishna. And all these great demigods are like distressed elephants who are caught in the forest fire of Jarasandha, Kamsa and all these big, big demons, and they are suffering. And they are awaiting when Krishna will appear and shower his mercy so that all of these problems will be extinguished. This forest fire will be destroyed. And thinking like this, all of these greatest demigods have now appeared within Kamsa's prison house and are about to begin glorifying Krishna with the most auspicious select verses. And these verses glorify Krishna as the supreme absolute truth, cause of all causes. And these verses are being spoken by the greatest of all demigods. That means all of these demigods accept that Krishna is the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead. And therefore these demigods' prayers should be taken very seriously. Ganpati season is coming. And many of you may be bombarded with a lot of questions about the supremacy of Krishna. So these are different pastimes and sections from the Srimad Bhagavatam which give testimony beyond doubt about Krishna's supremacy. If Krishna is not the supreme, why should all these demigods come and glorify Krishna as the supreme? These are words spoken by the demigods themselves. And therefore, these words must be accepted. Srila Prabhupada went to visit one temple in Chennai. This was a Shiva temple. And Srila Prabhupada was taken by one of the life members who was a well-wisher of ISKCON. And he was explaining to Prabhupada that we have this nice temple and we want you to visit this temple. So Srila Prabhupada went there. And what did Srila Prabhupada see? It was a Shiva Linga. And Prabhupada just offered obeisances. And Prabhupada was given some flowers to offer to the Shiva Linga. But Prabhupada just kept that flower to himself. And then when everyone had left, Srila Prabhupada just went to one corner in that same temple complex. And there was something in the corner and Prabhupada just threw his flower in that corner and came out. So Giriraj Maharaj was traveling with Srila Prabhupada and he was curious to know what did Srila Prabhupada do. So he went inside and he saw what is in that corner. There was a small deity of Krishna. In one corner there was a small deity of Krishna and Prabhupada took that chance. And in spite of the fact that there were so many other deities and even Shivalinga was there, but Prabhupada saw, if Krishna is there, first respect to Krishna. So Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, the absolute truth, cause of all causes. And the demigods are glorifying Krishna in these words. Satyavratam satyaparam trisatyam satyasya yonim nihitam cha satye satyasya satyam mrita satya netram satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapanna. So the first thing the demigods are glorifying Krishna is satyavratam. Satyavratam means, my dear Krishna, you are always true to your vow. So they are beginning glorification of Krishna with this word satyavratam. So why they are specifically referring to Krishna as satyavratam? Krishna has so many other characteristics. But why the demigods are specifically saying Satya Vratam first? Because the demigods are in great difficulty. And they had prayed to the Lord that, please, my dear Lord, you appear. And now after several days of intense planning and prayer and going through so many difficulties, Krishna has finally manifested in the womb of Mother Devaki. So demigods are very blissful that Krishna is actually fulfilling his promise. And only when he goes through his promise and he manifests and appears, we will be protected. So they are very much hopeful that Krishna will ultimately appear and kill Kamsa and protect them. So they are glorifying Krishna, my dear Lord, you are Satyavratam. You definitely gave your promise to us, to Lord Brahma, when he appeared to you and prayed to you that you will appear, but you have actually fulfilled that promise and come into the womb. And previously Balaram had been transferred from the womb of Devaki and had gone to Rohini, and so there was an abortion in one sense. And Balaramji had not manifested from Devaki. So till Krishna finally appears, you can never say what is going to happen. So demigods want to pacify Krishna and make sure that he really appears. So they are saying, you are actually Satyavratam. You are always truthful. You always keep your vow. We know you. Right? Sometimes you take loan, someone takes loan from you, you know, and he doesn't repay for a long time. But then he shows some symptoms of repaying, so immediately you go and tell him that, you know, you are the best amongst magnanimous souls. You are always truthful. Rival. You are always very careful in all the accounting. You never keep any debt. You never have any habit of keeping debt. We know you. So in this way, you are making sure that whatever is remaining also comes through. So demigods are hoping that Krishna has come to this stage in the womb of Devaki that finally he also manifests. And so they are saying, Satyavratam, you keep your vow. And also, Krishna is famous for Satyavrat, being a Satyavrat. Even in Ramayana, he has given his vow. Sakrdeva prapannoyas tavasmi itiyache. Abhayam sarvadatasmai dadami etat vratam mama. That Sakrdeva, even once someone says, my dear Krishna, I am yours, Krishna immediately affords complete protection to such a person. So therefore they are calling Krishna Satya Vratam. Or in other words, they are saying, my dear Lord, as far as our own vratas are concerned, the vows which we give to our own devotees is all relative. It is not Satya Vrata. It is Mithya Vrata. And here, amongst all these assembled members, all demigods, we have examples. Here is Shiva, famous for giving vow to Ravan. Right? And Shiva was worshipped by Ravan. And Ravan was a great devotee of Shiva. But finally, could he be protected? No. When Ram came, even in spite of Shiva's protection, Ravana was killed. Brahma gave vows, gave various kinds of benedictions to Hiranyakashipu. But when Narsingadev came, all of those vows, all of those different kinds of promises given, finished. Narsingadev went through all those promises and then finally chastised Brahma only. Be careful in giving all these kinds of benedictions. So Brahma, Shiva, all of these other demigods, they give various kinds of benedictions. But they are not Satyavrata. Only Krishna, When he makes a promise, he keeps it. He is Satyavrata. If you are a devotee of Krishna, no matter what, you will be protected. Protection is guaranteed 100%. Therefore, the demigods who are not able to protect their own devotees and worshippers for their own protection are approaching Krishna. Therefore, glorifying Krishna as Satyavratam. And then they are saying, you are Satyaparam. You are the absolute truth. You are the supreme absolute truth, not relative. And Trisatyam. Trisatyam means you are a truth in all the three phases of time. And also, Jnana Bala Kriya, all of these three energies, they are simply aspects of your power. Trisatyam. So therefore, in the 14th chapter of 10th canto, Brahmaji is glorifying Krishna in a beautiful verse where he describes 15 characteristics of the Absolute Truth in one verse. So that we'll see now. Ekastvamatma Purusha Purana Satya Swayam Jyoti Ananta Adya Nityoksharo Ajasra Sukho Niranjana Purnadvayo Mukta Upadhito Mrita. So in just one verse, Lord Brahma is glorifying Krishna as having these 15 characteristics. That is what Absolute Truth means. So he is using the word Satya in this shloka. But why Krishna is Satya is described in all the other 14 characteristics. Truth. Right? So most people have a very vague understanding of what is Satya. And generally in courts, you are expected, the witness is supposed to always speak the truth. Right? And of course, I have never been to any court, but we have seen in movies, they put the hand on Gita. Right? And they say, Jo bhi kahunga, sach kahunga. Satya ke siva dusra kuch nahi kahunga. And then they go on speaking whatever they want to speak. But somehow bring in Gita in between. So people have some understanding that something to do with truth, this Gita is there. But what exactly is the truth? What is Satya? That no one knows. So Satya means it has to fulfill all of these characteristics. The Param Satya has these characteristics. Only then he can be Param Satya. So previously Brahmaji saw that this is a small boy playing various games and Krishna was eating from all his other cowherd boyfriends. Cowherd boyfriends had brought their various dishes from home and one cowherd boy taking laddu, first eating with his mouth and then tasting and saying, yeah, this is good. It is bona fide. Please take. Very tasty, you will like it. He was first testing and tasting each item and giving Krishna his own remnants. And Brahmaji seeing this from top, Brahmaji bewildered. So in the bewildered state, Brahmaji thinks he is just an ordinary person. So he steals. Then he realizes he is not ordinary. This is absolute truth. So he is saying, Ekastvam Atma. So my dear Lord, the first thing is, you are the super soul. You are all pervading. You are not just an Anu. You are Vibhu, all pervading super soul. So naturally people will say, if something is all pervading, then how can there be personality? All pervading means light. Right? This light doesn't have any personality. All pervading. So is the absolute truth all pervading, impersonal? No. Ekastvam Atma, second characteristic, Purusha, is a person, is a vyaktitva, he has a personality, is all-pervading super soul, but not impersonal. He is a person. He has a personality. So if someone has a personality, then naturally, question is asked, is this personality old or young? Is a young man, old man, middle-aged man? What is he? Right. So naturally, amongst when we write down any form, first we write name, then we write gender, then we write age. So Brahma is introducing the absolute truth. Okay, what is his age? Is he young? Is he old? Said Purana. He's the oldest. He's the oldest personality. Ekastvamatma purusha purana govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. The oldest person, Krishna. So then Krishna will argue that if I am the oldest, then how I am manifesting as a young cowherd boy? When you see Krishna frolicking in the groves of Vrindavan, he doesn't appear to be oldest. So then he is saying, that is because I am Satya. Satya means I remain true in all the three phases of time. There is no concept of past, present and future. Always remain truth. Satya. Therefore, even if Krishna is a young boy, he appears to be always of the same age. One who does not change in the three phases of time, on whom the time has no action, he is Satya. Although he is the oldest, still appears like a young boy. Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra had so many grandchildren, but still he was young, very beautiful looking. It was not that he had white hair. No. You will never see Krishna with white hair and wrinkles and sitting like this with hand on the head thinking, so many problems I created in the material world, so difficult to handle. No. Satya. So then question is asked that if it is the absolute truth, so Krishna is saying, but I am just a cowherd boy. And do you mean I am responsible for all this time, karma, material nature, everything? How is it possible that all of these things are being handled when I am playing so many games in this forest of Vrindavan? How are all of these things happening? If I am responsible for everything, I am hardly giving attention to that. So he's saying, no, Swayam Jyoti. You are Swayam Jyoti. That means you are self-illuminated. You do not have to act extraneously. All your energies are coming out just like from the sun. All the rays are automatically coming out. So all energies are emanating from Krishna spontaneously. He doesn't have to work separately for this. Satya Swayam Jyoti. So someone may argue, oh, so Krishna is just limited and localized like the sun? No, he is unlimited. Don't think he is limited. He is Ananta. He is not limited just like the sun, he is unlimited. Okay, if he is unlimited like the sun, then the next question is that what about the origin of all of this creation? What about all these incarnations? They are also unlimited. Rama, Narsingha, Matsya, Kurma, they are all unlimited. So is Krishna equal to all of them? Yes, in one sense they are also unlimited, but still Krishna is Adya. He is unlimited, but origin of all of these other unlimited forms. Okay, so Krishna has a form. So form means that in the next material world appearance, does Krishna take this form again? Does he keep changing these forms? Nitya. Krishna has an eternal form. This form doesn't change. Okay, but as soon as we have form, this body goes through six changes. So does Krishna's body also go through these six changes? No, akshara. So Krishna's form is akshara. It doesn't go through these six changes. And as soon as we have a body which goes through these changes, there is distress. Change of body means distress. And akshara, no transformation of body, means immediately ajasra sukha, unlimited bliss. But then someone may argue, but half of the bliss Krishna is generating through so many dubious activities. He is going and stealing butter. Right? So he has greed. He is killing all these demons, chastising demons like Kaliya. That means he is displaying anger. And he is playing with all of these gopis. That means he is having lust. And so he is definitely enjoying, he may be ajasra sukha, having so much bliss, but he is actually displaying manifestations of greed, anger and lust in all these pastimes in Vrindavan. So how can you account for this? So Yashoda Mai catching Krishna and telling him, why are you going to so many people's house and stealing butter? Why don't you just enjoy butter here at home, what we are making? And Krishna is saying, I don't believe in simply sitting and eating at home. I believe in earning my food. So he's giving his argument. So that means it appears that Krishna is just like an ordinary mortal. He's greedy? No, he's free from all fault. He is Niranjana. He is Niranjana, means faultless, no contamination. And if he is free from contamination and all these activities he is doing is only because of reciprocation with devotees, then the question is that it appears that Krishna is dependent on his devotees. Dependence means it appears there is some incompleteness. He finds something is lacking or incomplete, that is why he needs devotees. So that means he is incomplete. No. Krishna's dependence on his devotees is not a symptom of his incompleteness, but it is a display of his super excellent quality of love. And therefore Krishna is Purna, he is complete in all respects. He is not incomplete. So is Krishna a transformation of knowledge? No. He is Mukta Upadhito, he is free from all material designations. And therefore he is nectar personified. He is Amrita. So thus, we have this entire description of Krishna, the Absolute Truth, having all of these characteristics. So anyone claiming to be God in this world, you subject him to this 15-point test. Give him a questionnaire. Fill in. Tick. Whether you have all this, right? Are you Swayam Jyoti? If you are Swayam Jyoti, let us switch off the light and see what is happening. Huh? Ajastra Sukha, unlimited bliss. You are filled with bliss? No, you are miserable. Purna, are you complete? No. Nobody in this world can be like that. This is Absolute Truth. These are the characteristics of Absolute Truth. That is the meaning of Satya Param Trisatyam. So in this way, the demigods are glorifying Krishna in so many ways. So, Satyasya Yoni means he is the source of all other relative truths. Nihitam cha satye. satyasy satyam vratasatyanetram satyatmakam tvam sharanam prapanna. The demigods are glorifying Krishna as the param satya. And then in so many other verses, they are glorifying Krishna. And finally, in one verse, they are describing how the impersonalists, they cannot get the same facility as the devotees. Yenye arvindaksha vimukta maninas tvayasta bhavat avishuddha buddhaya aruhya krichrena parampadam tata patantyadhonadrita yushmadangraya. So in the previous verses, they have glorified Krishna's lotus feet as a beautiful boat. Tvatpada potena mahatkritena kurvanti govatsapadam bhavabdhim. That to cross this ocean, your lotus feet are just like a beautiful boat, my dear Lord. And simply by climbing upon the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, a devotee can easily cross this ocean. And therefore, please give us shelter at your divine lotus feet. All demigods are praying. So for a devotee to cross this ocean, very easy. But for an impersonalist to cross this ocean is practically impossible. So again and again they are emphasizing that, my dear Krishna, you are so merciful to your devotees. To be a devotee of Krishna is one of the greatest, most powerful positions one can obtain. And all that demigods are recommending, become a devotee of Krishna. The demigods are not recommending, become our devotees. The demigods here are not saying that offer puja to us. Lord Shiva is not saying here in this series of verses that you go to my temple every Monday, please me, offer me worship and respect. He is saying worship Krishna, glorify Krishna. And what will you get by glorifying Krishna? Tvadpada potena mahatkritena kurvanti govatsapadam. The boat is so strong, it will carry you across this tempestuous ocean of material existence. So then we come to this verse that if you do not glorify Krishna and do not respect Krishna's personality and you're not attracted and enchanted by Krishna's beautiful lotus-like eyes, yenye aravindaksha vimukta maninas, one only thinks, one has this hallucination, one is living in a fool's paradise thinking that he is liberated. Tvayasta bhavat avishuddha buddhaya, the intelligence is contaminated. And aruhya krichrena parampadam. So one goes through various categories of obtaining knowledge and even attains the stage of Brahman realization, but because he does not have a loka standi, falls down again. Tvai asta bhavat. Asta means setting. Just like we say suryasta. So bhava asta means the feeling for Krishna sets. That means no feeling for Krishna. Decreasing feeling for Krishna. So initially some feeling is there because you want to become Krishna, and the more one progresses, that feeling goes down. That is called asta bhavat. Gradually diminishing feeling for Krishna. And that is called avishuddha buddhaya. That is called contaminated intelligence. Aruhya krichrena parampadam. So one attains the topmost position of reaching even the Brahma Jyoti, but patanti adha, one falls down. Anadrita yushmadangreya, because of having disrespected your lotus feet, my dear Lord. If we disrespect Krishna's lotus feet, then we have no position. We fall down. Therefore, all the greatest, most powerful personalities in this whole cosmos are giving warning. Do not embark on the path of impersonal liberation. Patanti adha. And immediately in the next verse, they are glorifying the devotees and saying that even if devotee fall down, that is much better than a jnani who is liberated. A fall down devotee better than liberated jnani. Just see what a statement. Tathanate madhavatavaka kvachit bhrashyanti marga tvaibaddha sauhrda tvaya bhigupta vicharanti nirbhaya vinayakani kapamurdha suprabho. Tathanate madhava. O Krishna, your name is Madhava. Your husband of the goddess of fortune. Anyone becomes devotee of Krishna, all good fortune awaits him. Therefore, a devotee can never experience misfortune. Even if temporarily there is some distress or problem or obstacle in a devotee's life, that should not be considered as misfortune. That should be considered as a test for him to ultimately gain that fortune. There cannot be misfortune in devotee's life because he is a worshipper of Madhava. Tathanate madhava tavaka kvachit bhrashyanti margat tvaibaddha sauhrda. O Krishna, even if a devotee may sometimes give up following regulative principles, may stop chanting Hare Krishna, may go away from the association of devotees, may ultimately forget Krishna consciousness, may even start wondering how he ever followed Krishna consciousness at some time, but not to worry. Because Baddha Sauhrda, he is very intimately related to Krishna at a certain point in time. Tvaya bhigupta vicharanti nirbhaya. Even such a devotee, he gives up practicing Krishna consciousness, has nothing to fear. Abhigupta vicharanti. He can roam around this entire material world nirbhaya, fearlessly. Such a devotee need not fear at all, because he can traverse all of these different obstacles, step on all these obstacles and cross even the greatest hurdles. Vinayakani kapa murdhasu prabho. Vinayaka anikapa murdhasu means the obstacles are many times put forward by demigods. Such a devotee, because he has taken shelter of Krishna, even if temporarily there are some problems, because of Krishna's reciprocation, he can step on the top of the heads of these demigods who are putting forward these obstacles and cross over without any fear, without any problem, without any hesitation. That is the power of a devotee. Even if the devotee has some problem and stops practicing Krishna consciousness, because he has developed an intimate relationship with Krishna, at a certain time, Krishna will take care of him. So he has a much greater security than a jnani who apparently is liberated and now has entered Brahma Jyoti. So understand, the future of a jnani is not secure. Even if now he appears secure, in future he will fall down. But the future of a devotee is secure. Even now he is fall down, tomorrow Krishna is going to take his responsibility. Therefore, become a devotee of Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna. That is recommended by the demigods. So demigods are saying, never leave association. Never follow any other philosophy. Just become devotee. And so many times people have tried to leave association. But the problem is, even if you try to leave association and try to do sense gratification now, you cannot enjoy like before. Because now you have heard so many Bhagavad classes. You have heard so much of philosophy. When you try to go and enjoy sense gratification, all these classes will now resound in your mind at full amplification. You'll hear all these things and that will haunt you. It's a fact. So as far as this life is concerned, all the enjoyment plans are finished. Even if you try to enjoy, you cannot. Even if someone gives up, tries to go and smoke, while smoking he is thinking. Always they used to say, no smoking. But I am unable to stop this. Why this is happening? This is Indra Tripti I am doing. So previously he was doing blindly. Now he knows exactly what he is doing and is able to categorize also. And because he has heard about hellish planets, he can also plan. Now because of this, which hell I may go? That also he can think. So how you can enjoy in this state? Not possible. Therefore, better take Krishna consciousness fully, rather than making in-between plans. Right? Just embrace this process completely. It is only the mind which bewilders us sometimes. And we feel frustrated and we feel like giving up our chanting. Sometimes it happens. The mind bewilders us. And sometimes we look at the bead bag with great anger. How the hell this came in my life? Who was the fellow who brought me? How did this happen? But these days will just pass by. Neglect it. One devotee in ISKCON, he got so frustrated, he decided to leave. He just left his bead bag, this, that, everything. He decided to go and see a movie. He went to the movie theater. He was standing to buy ticket. There was a book distributor outside, selling him, come on, take this book. He went inside the movie theater, sat for the movie. In the interval, they were showing some documentary. And then suddenly Hare Krishna devotees were chanting in that film clipping. And this fellow was thinking, my God, I am trying to forget Krishna. These Hare Krishnas are not leaving me. So he decided to leave that town. He left that town, took a flight, sat on the flight. Next to him was a devotee reading Bhagavad Gita. Got down from the flight, on the airport, book distributor again caught him. So finally he thought, Krishna has a plan for me. He doesn't want me to leave. Better go back. Therefore the demigods are saying, Krishna consciousness gives so much security, even fallen devotee more advanced than a liberated jnani. Because previous verse saying, arohya krichrena. They have gone there, but param padam tatah patanti. And the next verse talks about brashyanti. One is already brashyanti. But vinayaka anikapa murdhasu. He can step on all obstacles and reach the topmost platform. Therefore, be a devotee. And thus the demigods offer these prayers. And finally, after offering prayers, then we see the entire nature takes up a very auspicious front. It is described that auspicious signs are seen at all places. The time is most auspicious, Rohini Nakshatra, and Krishna, it seems, was born in Rohini Nakshatra on the 8th day, and the day Krishna was born 5,000 years back, it was a Wednesday, according to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. And so, all of these constellations create a very nice, peaceful environment. The earth becomes peaceful with nice, beautiful, auspicious trees blooming all kinds of flowers. The water becomes very favorable with rivers flowing very gently, with all the lakes and all these ponds filled with various lilies and lotuses. The air becomes very pleasing with gentle breeze, and although it is monsoon season, it became exactly like spring, and the wind became filled with very nice fragrance. And the Brahmanas who were chanting mantras, they ignited very auspicious fires, which during Kamsa's regime was not possible. And the ether became filled with all auspicious vibrations of the various birds. And in this most auspicious setting, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, appears from the womb of Devaki and manifests his beautiful form of Shankha, Chakra, Gada and Padma in front of Vasudev and Devaki. And it is described, Tam Madbhutam Balakam Ambujekshanam Chatur Bhujam Shankha Gada Diudahratam. So Krishna appears in his form with Shankha, Chakra, Gada and Padma, beautiful lotus-like eyes, curling hair, beautiful golden helmet, golden clothes, blackish complexion, Srivatsa and Kaustubha Mani. And carrying all of these auspicious symbols, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears in front of his most auspicious devoted servants, Vasudev and Devaki, to fulfill his promise which he had given to all these demigods. Because the whole episode began with Mother Earth and Brahmaji approaching, and Krishna had given his vow, I will appear. Therefore he is glorified as Satyavrata. Satyavratam. So Krishna now makes that glorification of his truth by appearing in front of these great personalities. And then Vasudeva and Devaki offer a series of most wonderful prayers. Vasudeva offers 10,000 cows in charity in mind, because he has no other facility to glorify Krishna's appearance. And later when Vasudeva is released, he remembers that. And when he has the facility later, he actually donates 10,000 cows. So he remembers that 10,000 cows I had just mentally offered before. So because he is sincere, again he makes it up. When he gets the facility and actually becomes king, he offers 10,000 actual cows to Brahmanas. And in this way, he celebrates Krishna's appearance by glorifying Krishna. And so next Tuesday, all of you are cordially invited to come here and participate with us in the most auspicious festival of Sri Krishna Janmashtami Mahotsav. And the next day is Srila Prabhupada's appearance day. So we end this series of lectures today, and from next Wednesday again, His Grace Govinda Prabhu will be taking lecture series on the nectar of devotion. So now we have discussed how Krishna has appeared. So now how to perform bhakti towards Krishna, that you will discuss in nectar of devotion. Okay? Shishranada Gopinaji ki.